Hi, I'm David Rothkopf, the CEO of the DSR Network and host of the Deep State Radio podcast. Here at DSR, we have always believed that in a world as complex, fast-moving, and full of risks as ours, we all need access to the best minds. That is why we have created the leading network for expert podcasts on the issues of the day you care about. We go in-depth on politics, the law, national security, foreign policy, intelligence, defense, climate, and new technologies with regular and special guests that are the leading voices in their fields. We also offer daily updates on global news, our DSR Daily, and on a key story of the day through our partnership with the New Republic. That is why over a million times a month, people like you choose to spend time with our hosts and guests. Membership is what supports this, and members get special benefits, including bonus content in virtually all of our podcasts. It's a big deal, and it's a good deal. Our monthly membership price is going to go up for the first time in our history on March 1st. So now is the time you can lock in our founder's rate of just $5 a month. To do so, go to the DSRnetwork.com and click on membership. It's that easy, but don't delay. Today's rates will only be available for a few more weeks. Join us. Support us. Go to the DSRnetwork.com right now. Thank you.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. It's the question that won't die, at least among DC elites. Should President Biden step aside so another Democrat can run in his place? Ever since Special Counsel Robert Hur's report contained asides about Biden's age and memory, triggering an over-the-top media explosion, Democrats have been engaged in a remarkably public bout of hand-wringing that shows no signs of letting up. One Democrat who has insistently sounded the alarm is David Axelrod, the veteran strategist and key mastermind of Barack Obama's 2008 and 2012 victories. So we invited him on the show to test out what this theorizing is made of, whether this alternative constitutes a genuine option or not, given all the immense logistical problems that would attend it. Welcome, David.
Good to see you, Greg.
So let's start here. I think a lot of press accounts misstate what really has Democrats worried. It isn't just Biden's age. It's the perception that he may not have the fight in him to beat Trump a second time. That's related to Biden's age, but it's a somewhat different thing. It isn't about garbled sentences. It's about the fight. You've alluded to this, saying that among Dems, there's a, quote, widespread fear that he's not up to it.
Well, look, in a sense, I think this conversation is academic because, I raised these issues back in the fall when I think it was, it was late, but it was a more realistic time frame for him to consider his options. And I said then three things. I said, one, that if you gave me Joe Biden's record and shave 10 years off him, I would have no concerns about this election, whatever the polling said at that juncture. The second was that this is an issue, and it's not an issue that I'm raising. It's an issue that's just screaming through all the polling and focus groups, and it's a concern, and it should be at least dignified as a legitimate concern. You shouldn't send, your agents out there to talk about bedwetting when in fact there's a real issue that is of concern to people. And then the third thing I said was if Joe Biden wants to be the nominee, he will be the nominee. It was entirely up to him. It seems to me that he's made that decision. I read Ezra Klein's piece with interest, and he raised some very valid points. But I also know Joe Biden, and I know that he is someone who believes that, he's always been underestimated, that he's being underestimated now. And pretty clearly, he's determined to run. So all of this is sort of an academic discussion. Now, if something happens along the way that would make it impossible for him to continue, we'd have a different discussion. But I don't see him waking up one morning here and saying, you know, I think I'm just going to step away.
You know him very well, obviously. So I wanted to ask you this. Biden recently said that he thinks another Democrat can beat Trump, but I suspect that might not be true. I don't know this from the inside, but I'm pretty persuaded that Biden thinks he's the only one who can beat Trump. That was his rationale in 2020, and I think it might be his rationale now. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, look, knowing Joe Biden, I think he always thinks he's the best candidate. You know, when I met with him in 2008 to talk about the vice presidential decision, because David Plouffe and I toured the finalists before Senator Obama made the decision. You know, he said, look, I thought I was the best candidate, thought I'd be the best president. I still think that. But the people of Iowa thought differently. So, I mean, he's a guy who has always had a chip on his shoulder. And frankly, a lot of people, including me, raised questions in 2020. He went forward. And in retrospect, he may have been the only person who could have beaten Donald Trump in that election. So, you know, he carries that with him. And so if he says, I agree with you that I think part of what motivates him, what actually motivates him may be one thing, but what he persuades himself is that he knows how to beat this guy and he can beat him again, and he's not sure about others. And frankly, by waiting, if he were for some reason to step away, he would have deprived the party of the system by which we pressure test potential candidates to find out who should be the nominee and who has the best opportunity to win. That's what the year before the election is all about. And you can, if you don't think that's an effective system, just consider consider Ron DeSantis, who had great ballyhoo in the fall of 2022, and now he's gone because the system tested him. Democrats would be flying blind without that. Not to say that if the party had to come up with a nominee, that they wouldn't come up with a strong nominee, but it's a harder situation when you haven't seen people actually out there on the battlefield.
Yeah, you raise a really important point, David, about DeSantis, and that leads me to this question. A lot of these analyses seem to take it as given that even if an alternate candidate could be picked under these circumstances with minimal damage, that this candidate would automatically be stronger against Trump than Biden. But we don't know that, do we? I mean, you know better than most people that no one can predict how a candidate fares under the glare of a national presidential campaign. I personally think Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer probably would be a safer bet, but I wouldn't say this with great confidence. Shouldn't this be part of the discussion?
Yeah, I mean, the point is, most of the party is not having this discussion anymore. I think that it flares up when things like the Hur report come out. It'll flare up perhaps again if there are incidents in which the president the problem is there is a dynamic now where anything that feeds the narrative gets more attention. So there may be moments like this, but I don't know that people are seriously thinking that he is going to withdraw and that there'll be another candidate. In terms of, you're right, it's hypothetical as to how candidates would do. I think it's a myth that there aren't strong potential candidates in the Democratic Party, however, which is something that was earlier was, the White House and folks around there were saying, well, gee, if he doesn't do it, who could? That was not true. And I think a campaign would have produced a strong candidate. And there is an argument that a candidate who didn't bring some of the some of the liabilities that Biden is, fairly or not right now, might have a better chance just because Trump is such a flawed candidate. I mean, it has become a battle of risk assessment between two candidates who have liabilities. Now, I think, you know, to me, it's not even a close call between the two of them. I think Biden, you know, certainly on the record, as I said earlier, but, you know, he's also someone who has his eye on the future. Neither of the, you know, we talk about the age of the candidates, but we should be talking about who's focused on the future and who's consumed by their own past. And Biden has, you know, there are many things that he's done, whether it's climate or healthcare, infrastructure, and under the umbrella of healthcare, pharmaceutical costs, the reinvigoration of labor unions, and you know, there are a whole range of things that he's done that speak to a portrait of the future and someone who's thinking about the future. And you know, what we get from Trump is just a guy who's consumed by his past and by vengeance. And so I don't think it's a tough call between them, but it is a war of, I mean, people are assessing the liabilities as much as the strengths here.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I think we should all concede, whichever side of the debate we're on, right? It's pretty clear that Biden world didn't expect to be losing right now to the degree that they are. It's a little hard to tell for sure, right? So do you get the sense that Biden world admits at least that things aren't going to plan? They offer explanations like voters are checked out, and that's probably true, but they can't be happy with where things are. Is there a private theory of what's happening as opposed to a public one?
Well, I don't know, because they haven't exactly been consulting me, Greg, since I made my feelings known. But what I do see is a little more intensity. I wish in the last two or three, you know, I look back at the last two or three weeks, and I think, you know, her report notwithstanding, Republicans really have had a bad run here, you know, and a lot of it has to do with Trump, you know, walking away from this immigration law that they painstakingly negotiated and that answered their own petitionings for what should be in this funding package. The way they've stalled Ukraine funding, also at Trump's behest, at a time that's absolutely critical. And you see, you know, this past weekend, the when you juxtapose the murder of Navalny, the withdrawal of Ukraine because they didn't have enough ammunition, and Trump, you know, pulling the strings on Ukraine, failing to address Navalny, and heading to a sneaker con to sell his new gym shoes. I mean, this was a treasure trove, and I don't know why Democrats weren't just flooding the zone from morning till night, just pounding the hell out of the Republicans, who, by the way, went on vacation rather than House Republicans, rather than addressing these urgent needs, including, by the way, the fact that we don't have a budget. But so all of these things are opportunities. I think that you're beginning to see a kind of picking up of the pace. I think they got to pick it up a lot more.
Yeah, I think you really raise an important point there. Sometimes it seems like the rest of the party doesn't quite recognize the fight they're up against, whether Biden does or not. Now, your point is well taken that this conversation is mostly over, but there is a scenario where maybe Biden has a health event in the spring.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
Right. And so if that happens, then the convention scenario kicks in, right?
Maybe it would have to.
Yeah. So a bunch of Dems, Gretchen Whitmer, Gavin Newsom, signal that they're in. All the delegates then have to choose. Intense jockeying ensues. It's a closely watched event, but and with countless people expressing their views on social media, which would, of course, be very tame and civil, but they...
Yes, as always,
right,
yes.
But they wouldn't be voting. So where are you on that scenario? Is it really plausible? It seems highly far-fetched, even if it would have to happen. What do you think?
Well, first of all, the one candidate you didn't mention was the vice president, who I think would have an interest in this as well. That would be uncharted waters, okay? I don't even know. We have not had a contested convention on the Democratic side in 56 years. The last one was in Chicago as well. It was in 1968, and it didn't go particularly well, but I think there were other reasons for that. So I don't know what this would look like. We don't have any practice doing this, but there's an argument that it would enliven interest and would be energizing. I don't want to go too far down the road here because I'm not expecting that scenario. And I'm not expecting, nor God forbid, wishing for any scenario like that. And I'm absolutely convinced that Biden has made his decision, and that decision is irrevocable.
Yeah, I mean, your point is really well taken there. I wonder whether all the talk about it, and of course I'm participating here in that, I wonder whether all the talk about it sort of makes alternatives seem more plausible than they actually are. And that in itself poses its own danger in a sense, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, I think that this may not be the battle that people wanted with these two candidates, but it is the battle. And the consequences of it are going to be pretty profound. And people need to focus on that. I think this is a, it's become a parlor game that can be obtrusive to the goal of actually mounting a winning campaign. But, you know, it would help, honestly, if the president himself those around him acknowledge that this is a concern that people have. It's crazy to think that, well, if you don't talk about it, then people won't think he's old. You know, that's crazy. And so they have to think about, how do you strategize around that? How do you talk about it? What you shouldn't do is probably what he did at that press conference on the Thursday night that her report was released, and yell at a reporter who said people are concerned about your age and say, no, that's your opinion. Actually, it wasn't her opinion. That is if there's one thing that is absolutely clear from every bit of research we've seen, that is an obstacle for him, and they've got to figure out how to navigate it.
Yeah, I mean, Democrats who raise these concerns, though, tend not to talk constructively a lot of the time, right? I think you said somewhere that you can't unring the bell, that when Biden flubs something, it confirms voter suspicions about something they already believe, and that this is very hard to reverse. So, okay, as someone who's been in the heat of these campaigns, is this fixable? Is there a kind of communication strategy that could allow all the stuff you said about his very good record as president to prevail over those baked-in fears?
Well, Greg, I think the unringing of the bell applied to her report, that it was out there, I think that you have to acknowledge that people have concerns and that you understand those concerns, but that you're dealing with two candidates here who are up in years, and this isn't about their future. This is about our future, and it's about what kind of country we want to have. And we know what Biden's values are. They're reflected in the priorities that he's set and that he's worked on. We know what Trump's priorities are, mostly Trump, but he also is the author of a lot of these policies that I think have energized people to go to the polls in the midterm elections, go to the polls in all these special elections, a kind of extremism that's gripped the Republican Party. So there's a real choice here. But I just think you won't get a hearing unless you at least acknowledge to people that, yeah, I get it. I understand that there's a concern here, but you know, this isn't about my future or his. You know, it's about yours, and you know, you can look at the priorities that I've set and the things that we've done to get a sense of where I want to go, and then he can describe the America that he sees. You know, I call it the Moses strategy. You know, he may not get there with us, but he's trying to build a future that future generations can enjoy. And I think that is the closest, you know, I always used to say, when you're planning a strategy, start from the truth and work from there. This is the truest and most genuine response. You're not, you know, I think, yes, I do believe that he's sharper in private than he is in public. I've talked to enough people to believe that. And I don't think you could do the things that he's done without being that. He has a deficit in front of the cameras that is really hurting him. And so you can't, and every time he goes out there, there is going to be that reaction unless he figures out a way to talk about it honestly.
Yeah, and that's the type of thing he does well. You can envision a way of doing this that plays to his strengths. When he's the guy talking to the young kid about his own stutter, that's when he's most human.
Yes.
And by the way, that is a profound contrast with Trump that I think worked very well in 20 and could work again, couldn't it? I mean, you could really see this playing to his strengths in remarkable ways if it were done right.
Yes. I think that in this case, honesty is the best policy. And you're asking people to weigh a lot of factors. His age is one factor. There are other factors here that go to values and vision and identification with people, you know, in which I think he's got huge advantages, but you've got to acknowledge the concern in order to get to the payoff, I think.
Right. He's sort of, I think, understood by a lot of voters as someone who really has dealt with the most difficult things in life, right?
And well, there's no doubt.
And so aging is one of those difficult things in life.
Yeah. Well, and beyond that, you know, I think when you tell a reporter, for example, you know, that's your opinion that people think that I'm too old. When you know that that's not the case, it actually compounds the problem because it makes it look like you're completely out of touch, even with your own situation. He knows very well that people are concerned about that. And he thinks that somehow he can somehow kind of bogart his way through it and deny that fact. That just compounds the problem. So he shouldn't do that.
I want to try to end on a bit of a positive note and suggest and ask you whether the case for alarm is really quite as strong as it is being presented in some quarters.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think the case for alarm would be as great if Donald Trump weren't the candidate on the other side. And I think that that also speaks to Biden's opportunity, because this will be a choice if they navigate the age issue honestly and openly and then move on to the contrast. It will be a choice, and if they marshal a very strong surrogate army to go after Trump on all of these outrageous behaviors, not just the outrageous things he says. I saw a piece that said, well, you know, the president wants them to go after the things that Trump says. It's really more than what he says, Greg. It's what he's doing right now. The reason that Ukraine is not being rearmed is because of Donald Trump. Okay. The reason that we don't have more stricter border procedures and a reforming immigration system is because Donald Trump said no. I mean, it's yes, he says some things that are just batshit crazy, But he also has done things that are deeply destructive. So it's not just about what he says. And there ought to be an army of people out there raising hell about the things that he's doing right now.
Yeah.
And I think if that, but in terms of, if you want to end on a positive note, what I would tell you is this. I wrote a book some years ago called Believer, and it wasn't about any particular candidate. It was about my belief ultimately in American democracy and in the good sense of people and in our ability to change the course of history in a positive way. I still believe that. And I think at the end of the day, for that reason, I have faith that this is going to end up in the right place. But it's going to be a very, very anxiety producing 8 months.
It sounds like if the age issue is handled properly, you see Biden as the favorite.
Yeah. Well, I just think he's the favorite because he's a normal human being and he has values that most of us share. He doesn't think acting like a jackass somehow makes you strong. And he knows how to work with people, including people in the other party, to get things done. And there are a whole range of reasons why I think Biden is the favorite here. Might not have been if there were a different candidate. But this candidate that he's running against is uniquely flawed. And, I said before that Trump is, whatever you thought of his first term, the second would be like the Delta variant, 1,000 times more virulent and hard to control. So, I think people will get that. But we need the president to speak honestly about the age issue, but we also need the campaign to kind of shift into a higher gear here and be relentless. I hope we're moving there.
It's an interesting irony. Speaking to the desire for normalcy, the type of thing that you're talking about here, there's a way to address all these problems and do that at the same time.
Yes, I think so. Absolutely. I'm hopeful that this will evolve in the way it should. And like I said, because of the stakes, I've never before sort of worried about elections the way we worry about them. This one, I've lived through the election of Republican presidents, Democratic presidents. I might prefer the Democratic candidate, but I didn't go to bed fearful if the Republican candidate won, that some cataclysm was going to ensue or that something was going to happen overnight that would be, disastrous. This is a whole different scale. And that's why people are so uptight, and that's why people are so worried. The stakes are just huge.
Certainly true. Well, David Axelrod, thank you so much for coming on with us. We really appreciate it.
All right, Greg, great to be with you.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.